A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
A ball hit well by Ohapi, sending Cabbage back to the wall, and that is a great catch by Trey Cabbage. No, he can't make the play. It falls into the stands. That's a walk-off.
No way.
Ohapi walks it off. Cabbage almost made a phenomenal play, but he couldn't hold on to the baseball. And the Angels are going to walk it off.
Leave it to the 2024 Houston Astros to wrap up a weekend series where they could have had their second sweep of the year with a big old moist fart like that as they win 2-3 against the Angels but lose yesterday 9-7 after that walk-off home run off of Josh Hader. Hello and welcome aboard Gallant and George. It is Monday, June 10th, 2024. Joe George is back in the Joe George chair. Joe, welcome
Hello.
Back.
Thank you.
Is it Groundhog Day again with the Houston Astros? Not necessarily because they did win 2 out of 3 and they did make up a gain in the AL West, but God.
And I think this is the first time they've lost this way this season, so it's not fully Groundhog Day.
On a dropped home run?
Yeah. I don't think that's happened at another point this year. What a weird way to end the game. I thought he had it, obviously.
I did too.
You heard TK's call. Like, they were convinced he had it. It was in his glove.
And then I thought that person who was wearing a Rangers jersey in left field was the one who knocked it out. Nope, no one knocked it out. It just fell out of his glove.
Honestly, those people are my least favorite people in sports fandom. You go to an Astros Rangers game and someone's there in a Yankees jersey. I don't understand you people. I don't get it. Just wear nothing.
He might be a jersey guy, but I agree with you on that front. Out of place, unless he's just an Astros hater that happens to live in the greater Los Angeles area. And you know what? There are certainly plenty of those.
That's true.
Whatever the case, you drop that possibly caught home run. You see Ryan Presley do what we've been seeing a lot of from Ryan Presley this year in the eighth inning. I said, Joe, going into the weekend that I'm not accepting anything less than a sweep. If any of us accept something less than a sweep this weekend, it's because we're settlers. And they could have had the sweep. They're second of the year. You could have been 4 games under .500 for the first time since April 9th. And I get it. You won 2 of 3. But I'm annoyed. I think we're all annoyed. And now we got some West Coast baseball tonight against the San Francisco Giants.
8:38, isn't that what time it starts or something like that? Or I know those are Angels games. But yeah, late baseball tonight, which makes it so much better when they lose games. Hopefully they'll be fine over the next three versus the Giants. But what's frustrating about yesterday's game too, and because generally I'm with you that a sweep is all that should have happened this weekend. It's more frustrating because you had yesterday's game easily in hand.
Yeah.
You should not have lost. Not even the best performances all around leading up to Presley and then Hader blowing the game, but it just was everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And a lot of the issues too, like for me, they go back to Saturday's game. You're up by 5 runs and using Ryan Presley. What for? Why are you using Ryan Presley, Joe Spada?
He didn't pitch well that game either. He allowed 2 hits, and he also had a wild pitch like he did yesterday.
But what's the point of having him in? Montero has to do his job, and then Abreu comes in, and then Presley comes in. You're up by 5. Where's Seth Martinez? Where's whoever else, low-level arm is in your bullpen? And use them. And then for it just to be followed up by Presley giving it up again, his 5th blown save of the season. It's just gone.
This is the 2024 edition of Martin Maldonado regularly playing over Yiner Diaz. I don't know what option you have to put in the 8th inning instead of Ryan Presley, but you have options. If you're Joe Espada, I do not think that you should be married to what Ryan Presley used to be. You should be looking at somebody else to put in that spot. I don't know if it's Rafael Montero. Montero allowed a home run yesterday. I don't know if it's Brian Abreu, but Abreu has clearly been pitching better than Presley of late. I don't know if you're thinking about maybe Taylor Scott or something like that, but after Friday, where Fromber goes the distance, you had a rested bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
You used Ryan Presley back-to-back games, and Ryan Presley didn't look good in either of them. And, Joe, you saw something online that seems to be consistent with the excuse-making that we have seen for Presley this year, a statistic.
Yeah, he is blown. Well, I saw Spillane tweeted this out.
Adam Spillane.
His last 16 appearances, he had a 2-3 ERA. He was great. He had 30% strikeout rate. Like, that's as he's coming in to blow yesterday's game. And it's ironic that, like, it feels like it's not a jinx. I don't believe in that in sports, to be honest. I don't believe in the no-hitter jinx, anything like that. But you see these tweets come out about how great the bullpen has been. And Adam Spillane, like, it lays it out of just how good Ryan Presley has been over his last 16 appearances. And then appearance 17 is just a disaster. There is no faith that he can be, like, yeah, he was good all those appearances before. But all the faith in Ryan Presley is gone.
Yeah.
All the faith that he can be a guy that's going to shut down the game and get you to the ninth inning to Hader, all that has just evaporated. I don't care what his stats say. Like this goes back to stuff I've seen with like Jeremy Branham and Michael Schwab going back and forth. They were at it again yesterday after this game about demoting Ryan Presley. Well, Jeremy and Joel were right. Like, Ryan Presley should be demoted. He should not be the eighth inning guy.
Who wants Ryan Presley still in the eighth inning?
People that look at his stats and, in my opinion, like, are Astros fanboys, and I don't know if they watch the games either.
There's some people that keep on bringing up, Joe, in addition to what Adam Spillane did with that sample size where he was looking better, they're bringing up that he's had bad luck with the batting average on balls in play and a bunch of other statistics, fielding, independent hitting, etc., stuff like that.
It's June 10th.
And I understand that you can use these to make an argument, but, I mean, just look at his ERA. His ERA is almost 6. So, to me, it's that simple. Move him into a different role. I get it. It might bruise his ego further than you've already bruised his ego. Well, guess what? Josh Hader's just a better pitcher, even if he did allow that home run yesterday. And Ryan Presley, the skills are clearly deteriorating. It happens to everybody. You can't just continue to put a guy back out there because of what he did in the past. And I understand it. Like, there should be a healthy deference for the things that he did in the playoffs. I know that Chandler Rome has highlighted that with us when he's joined the show. There should be some respect for what he's done here. It's not to say all of a sudden, sort of in the same way that we did with Dusty Baker, oh, this guy's a bum, he's out, you know? Or with even Martin Maldonado, maybe a more extreme example of that, because Maldonado was worse than Presley. But there is this weird, from some, marriage to keeping Presley in this role, and, oh, he's just not pitching in situations where he's comfortable. F off with that.
Yeah.
Come on. We're all watching this, and none of us feel comfortable with him out there.
Well, and the problem is, too, and to what you were saying earlier, like there is no – I don't know what the solution is. Like last year with Maldi, it felt so simple. You play Yiner more. Mm-hmm. This year with Abreu, you play Singleton or Loperfido more, and it's you solve your problem at first base. You can move Abreu into the eighth inning, but it probably still causes all your issues with Ryan Presley, with him just in the seventh instead of the eighth. So I guess it's really at that point, like at one point in the game, does he ruin it for you for the most part? Because that's where I'm at with him. Like Taylor Scott, his ERA is great this year. He's not pitching in high leverage moments very often, but they need to try something.
I trust.
And it's not Montero either, though.
I trust Taylor Scott more than I trust Ryan Presley.
Agreed.
Scott's been more consistent this year. I get it. It's a more high leverage situation to pitch at that point in the game than the moments in the game where Scott is typically pitching. But, I mean, come on. Results speak for themselves. We have a 2-month sample size. And I get it. Take a look at that 16-game sample size that Adam Spillane did. Okay, cool. It looked great. But, I mean, we just have not felt that kind of comfort with Ryan Presley on the hill in quite some time. And I feel like at this point, if Joe Espada is not seeing it, then he's crazy.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, and we'll hear more from Joe Espada in the next segment about Ryan Presley, we're just not getting it. For what it's worth, and maybe we should be listening to Jose Altuve after the game, but Jose Altuve, when asked about this series, still pretty positive.
We play to win. Every victory is good. Every game we lost is difficult. But, you know, we got to move forward, and then we play a good series here. If you see the big picture, we took two out of three, and that's, for me, really important.
They did play better. I mean, back-to-back games, 5-for-14 with runners in scoring position. The entirety of the series, I mean, they scored, 6 runs, 7 runs, and 7 runs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the offense is getting hits. Starting pitching, for the most part, pretty good. Not the best start from Verlander, but I like what you saw from Hunter Brown. Maybe a little too many walks. I like what you saw from Framber Valdez. I mean, he went 9 innings. How can you not like what he was able to do? But when it ends like this, man, I, I, I hope that the Astros clubhouse is feeling the same way as Jose Altuve afterwards. And Altuve was asked a little bit later about, hey, all the positive things that are going on. And I mean, he basically said the same old thing. Hey, we're playing good baseball.
We, you know, came here and played good, you know. Took two out of three. Today was a really good game for both teams, you know, and they ended up winning. But like I said, I always see the big picture. We won the series, and we got to go to San Francisco and try to do the same thing.
I get the big picture. I do. But to me, I mean, the big picture to me is you had an opportunity for a second sweep this year. Going into the series this weekend, the Angels stink. And for it to end like that truly stinks, because you had this one in the bag and the supposed best part of your roster, the bullpen, messed it up.
Well, and that's two series in a row. You win the first two games versus the Cardinals, you lose the third game. You win the first two games versus the Angels, you lose the third game. You had a chance to be a half game back of the Rangers. You know, you were that going into Sunday. You leave a game and a half back leaving Sunday. So there's part of it. Like, I know there's 97 games or something like that left in the season. So in theory, there's a lot of time.
Yeah.
But this was just another moment where they could slowly start to close the gap between the Rangers and the Mariners. Mm-hmm. And they had the game in hand, and they lost. Like, if they just would have lost this game 10-0, I'd probably be like, oh, you know what it is. Like, you lose baseball games.
I'd be mad about that, too.
Like you lose baseball games. Sometimes the ball doesn't go your way, and you have a bad day. Justin Verlander was awful. But they had a way to win this game. They had a chance to overcome a poor performance from Justin Verlander, a performance in which he looked old and looks like he couldn't strike guys out. But once again, this team, it lets you down in a way that it's Groundhog Day, it's frustrating. And what's different about these issues is I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how they fix it without making trades. Like, trades fixes your bullpen problems, because that's the only way to save it. At this point, I don't believe there's Ryan Pressly redemption arc coming. I don't believe that, you know, Montero is going to be some big-time out-getter for you in the 7th, 8th, and 9th. And you had the opportunity to win the third game of the series, and you failed to do so. Going into the weekend, I would have said, if I was here on Friday, winning 2 out of 3 is fine.
Settler.
Yeah, settler. But the way they lost the third game, it's frustrating. It's frustrating.
Do you have a solution for Joe George and your Houston Astros? Bring it to the table, 713-780-3776, to call or text in. Also, I'll just ask this question. Is it okay to be satisfied with the Astros taking 2 or 3 this weekend? Because they did take 2 or 3 this weekend, for what it's worth. You're going to hear from Joe Espada talking about Ryan Pressly and his status going forward. Next, it is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around.
Forward to that one, tell you about our friends at O Athletic. You can check them out, oathletic.com. They're in the Heights, 767 North Shepherd. Great place to go and get a workout. I'll be there tomorrow morning, bright and early, with my guy Cam, my trainer, trying to lose some weight in 2024. We're making good progress so far. Look, let's just peel back the curtain here back a little bit, okay? We're trying to get the 2 off the scale. We're making progress. We're getting there. We're about 6 pounds away. Lost 13 pounds since we started this. So slow and steady wins the race. You know, we want to pick up the pace a little bit as we go down this final stretch. We're trying to get a good amount of weight loss in 6 months. But we're on our way. We're feeling good. And O Athletic is a great place for you to feel good as well. Over 100 classes per week that you can take in the morning and in the afternoon. Whether you want to do weightlifting, agility training, you want to try out Brazilian jiu-jitsu and boxing classes, you can do all of that. OAthletic.com. It's the gym for me. It should be the gym for you. And hey, come out tomorrow. I'll be there at 9 a.m. We'll see you then.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
There's a base hit in the left center field. Ohapi got a bad break. It's not going to matter. He's going to score. Neto's going to go to second. We have a one-run game. RBI double from Zach Neto on an 0-2 pitch.
I mean, there were plenty of times after that for Joe Espada to pull Ryan Pressly, who had pitched 25 pitches the night before. I'm just saying, it is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You want to jump in, 713-780-3776 is how you call in. It's how you text in. You want to talk about, I don't know, solutions for the Astros. They did win 2 or 3 this weekend, and I suppose there is some room for positivity in the way that Jose Altuve was discussing it. But for me, and I think for Joe, I was accepting nothing less than the sweep this weekend. And the way that you lose a sweep up 7-4 in the eighth inning, where Ryan Presley, Rafael Montero allow a couple of runs, and then Josh Hader allows that home run down the left field line that was in and out of Trey Cabbage's glove. But, I mean, hey, look, I mean, Josh Hader had allowed a base runner right before that, too. It's very frustrating, and I get it. Like, there's still plenty of time left. The 2022 Seattle Mariners were at this phase back in that year before rallying and, of course, making it into the playoffs and the wild card round. Yordan Alvarez is hitting. Jose Altuve is hitting. Like, there's some positive to take Yiner's away from raking. The weekend. Yiner is raking. Jose Abreu actually did some things over the weekend.
They lost the game in which he had a multi-hit game.
Yeah. I mean, he's hitting for power this weekend. So all of that happens, and yet losing that last game makes the entirety of this weekend not satisfying.
It leaves a stench. It just leaves a stench.
Big old
on
fart.
Yeah. It's not good enough. Like this season. That's why when you brought up Presley and the people were talking about his BABIP and all that stuff and the unluckiness of the Astros. Like I just don't care anymore. It's June 10th. At some point, you are what you are. And sometimes guys in baseball, they do have bad luck for an entire season. And maybe that's what the Astros, just the whole organization, is going through for an entire season. At some point, like, it just, reality has to set in. And it's not bad luck. It's like you lost the game in which you had it in control, and you left, as you said, a giant fart smell on the way as you left Los Angeles.
Yeah, like a meaty, like, death fart.
Because, like, there is a lot of good. Like, what Yiner Diaz, his turnaround, what he's done, is very positive. Like, 4 home runs in 4 straight games. He's tied for second, the longest streak now in franchise history for a catcher, which, you know, sometimes it's a DH, which is a dumb thing. But that's a very positive thing for Yiner Diaz, to be hitting home runs, to be, you know, they feel confident moving him back up in the lineup. Jeremy Pena has been pretty good. Alex Bregman, hopefully his hand's okay. Like, we await news on that. The only excuse, like, normally I'm not for the injury excuse. I am, like, opening up my eyes a little bit this season because these guys just can't catch a break. Like, that's the other takeaway from this weekend. Like, Tucker's still on a crutch. It's down to one crutch now, we've learned. He doesn't need both anymore. It's a crutch. Bregman gets plunked. Like, these guys can't stop hitting foul balls off their legs. Like,
The baseball gods?
The baseball gods do not like the Astros this season.
Bregman, supposedly, the x-ray is negative once again. But, yeah, to hit the wrist, a little bit concerning. And, I mean, that led to Trey Cabbage being in the game.
And Dubon.
Right. Dubon, not a great weekend either. Cabbage standing in left field. I mean, there is a part of me with Joey Loperfido back on Saturday that wishes Loperfido had been there, because I think Loperfido is a better fielder.
Same.
So, I don't know. Obviously, that didn't happen. He drops the ball. Are you going to get too mad about Cabbage? I mean, it would have been a tough catch to make no matter what, but it was in his glove. Falls out of his glove. I mean, is that a home run or is that an error? I feel like it should be like an E7, but hey, whatever. Anyway, here is Joe Espada. Joe Espada, manager of the Houston Astros, was asked about Ryan Presley and the use of him going forward after the game.
We're going to continue to rely on him, man. He's one of our guys. He's big part of our bullpen, and I believe in him. He has gotten big outs for us in the past, and he will.
Do you believe him? I mean, I don't believe him. The way he's talking there, he's trying to be nice, trying to be positive, but, I mean, I don't hear confidence in him saying, hey, we're going to keep on using Presley. He's one of our guys. Well, maybe he shouldn't be one of your guys anymore. I don't know, Joe. I mean, we've got a pretty big sample size.
It's like a default answer right there. I mean, look, the reality is this is what Ryan Presley has done here this season, 2024. Houston Rob put this up on Twitter. Ryan Presley, when appearing in a game, tied up by one or up by two this season. A loss, a hold, blown save, kept the game tied once, a hold, blown save, kept the game tied, blown save, they lost, another loss, and then a blown save.
A lot of losses and blown saves.
It's not just in its tie game, one run, two runs. In a moment when you need him to be clutch, Ryan Presley is consistently failing this season. And yes, World Series champion, I get it. But they need to find an alternative solution, and that would be acquiring someone or hoping that, you know, Taylor Scott could go into a more prevalent role in the seventh inning, or Seth Martinez.
Scott's pitching
try
well.
Try something.
What do you have to lose? What do you have to lose? Scott is pitching well. Try it. Why not? What do you have to lose here? Why do you have to keep putting Ryan Presley in that same role? Is it such a big blow for his ego to be taken out of the closer role and the setup role in the same year? I mean, sorry, this isn't a sport about feelings. We're talking about a team that's been to seven straight ALCS with an owner that some across the sport consider ruthless. Where's that ruthlessness?
Don't.
I mean, I get it.
Ryan Presley makes too much to be ruthless.
I don't know, man. You can't keep on looking at what these guys are making and say, well, we have to play them. If guys are playing better, then play the guys who are playing better.
Yeah. Michael here on the YouTube, Paul, says get rid of his Johnny Cash entrance.
Yes. I've been saying that for a while. I thought it was lame when he was good. Like,
yeah.
I've never understood that. I'm sorry. You're not Mariano Rivera. Don't.
You shouldn't have been able to keep it in the eighth inning. But now that you're not performing on a consistent basis, it's got to go. It can't have it anymore. Next time I'm at Minute Maid, if he comes in during the eighth inning, it can't be there. It's got to go.
I agree. King of Twitch asks, what do you want Espada to say? Presley sucks. This isn't about what we want Espada to say. It's about what we want Espada to do going forward. Whatever he says there, okay. You know what? No matter what, he's going to try to be positive, complimentary of his players, have their back. But it's not about that. It's about what he actually does with his actions. And the action is continuously to put this guy out there, and he's going to blow it up.
Because what's the difference between what I would ask Joe Espada is, like, what's the difference between the bullpen and the lineup? We've seen throughout the entire season that Joe Espada has not been afraid to tinker with the lineup. Alex Bregman has gone from 2 to 6 to 5 to 4. He's been all over the place. Jeremy Peña, Yainer Diaz, Jake Myers, they're moving all up and down the lineup to make things work and to try different things. The bullpen is where Joe Espada has made it clear he's unwilling to even attempt to do so. It is Abreu, it is Presley, it is Hader, unless the guy is down. That is the plan. They are sticking to it. They are not going off script. And I would just ask, why? Like, what is the difference? Explain it for the baseball dumbs, like me, apparently. Like, why can you change your lineup around consistently, but you can't move Ryan Presley into the seventh inning, into the sixth inning? Like, why can't you do these things?
Junior Broncos, I think, joking, says Presley was probably going off a script. Now, script for Presley this year is
been in my mentions.
I mean, not be good.
He's coming at me for my Fromber take.
Who cares?
Oh, no, that's what he said.
Wow, Fromber had a good start against the Angels. The Angels suck. Can we stop? Can we stop? Wow, he went 9 innings. Good. I would expect him to. The Angels aren't good. They have no one of value on that team.
No one.
I mean, Mike Trout's hurt, right?
I don't know. Ohapi?
Yeah.
Who is that guy?
Great question.
Who is that guy?
New segment, Joe George. We need to have a power ranking system here for who's at blame for the Astros only winning 2 of 3 over the weekend, because we have standards here. It's called Fall Guy. Hit it.
In a season where anything and everything has gone wrong for the Astros, there's always one person to blame.
And that has been the case for Henley early on. There is no place to go. There is no place to hide.
Every hero has their own origin story. Every girl that goes on a date with Paul has some level of regret. And every Astros game has a fall guy.
Y'all want to keep rolling like this? Then I need to know who's going to be the fall guy.
Who's the fall guy for this weekend?
I don't like the shot.
That's all right.
From Voice Guy. Voice Guy. Who I'm assuming, is that artificial intelligence?
I love AI.
I will kill him.
I went deep dive on AI last night.
I will kill that man.
Trying to find the big movie guy trailer voice.
I will stab that artificial intelligence in the neck.
It's a real person.
I'm going to abuse my Alexa later tonight. That's a real person that did that?
Well, I mean, it's AI.
Yeah, exactly.
They have to record
words. I'm going to tell Alexa to die in a fire when I get home, and you can't do anything about that. But that was a beautiful open.
Thank you.
Look, it's Presley. Presley sucked Saturday, and he sucked yesterday.
You could go Dubon. I mean, they had the game right there. You could go Joe Espada. honestly,
Espada's fair too here.
I'm going Espada.
Okay, Espada's number one.
He's my fall guy for this weekend.
Okay,
he uses Presley unnecessarily on Saturday.
Okay,
he puts him back out there on Sunday. He has opportunities to take him out. He doesn't do it, and he's going to keep putting him out there consistently to do it. Espada's the blame.
He is the one that can use Ryan Presley. He is also the one that can pull Ryan Presley. So fair argument. I just feel like we've seen so much with Ryan Presley. At a certain point, don't you expect him to be good? I don't know.
No.
The Angels stink.
No, don't.
But clearly, that's not the case. I know some are probably going to bring up Mauricio Dubon. I know someone on the text line was bringing up his struggles
over the course of the weekend. I mean, I'm glad he's playing, though, you know? I'd like to see Lopefito, now that he's back on the roster, play a little bit.
Any hater consideration for this? I mean, he did throw the pitch.
Yeah, it wasn't a clean inning.
Yeah, I feel like he's kind of got a pass in the first 28 minutes of the show today.
He's had sort of like the stretch that Adam Spillane of the Associated Press brought up about Presley, where he's been good. Like, Hader's been good for a very long time, but the problem is Hader had his issues at the beginning of the year, and you're sort of to the point of, you're paying him that much. None of those issues should have ever happened. And this does remind you that he had some issues earlier in the year,
yeah,
which are one of the reasons that you are, at this moment in time, pretty far off of the American League West, and 6.5 games back in the division, and 1.5 back of the Texas Rangers for second place.
Yeah, it's...
You did gain ground this weekend, for what it's worth.
Hey, you gained ground this weekend. And the wild card, it's only 4.5 back.
Oh.
So, wild card insight.
I was hanging out over the weekend. I went to Lake Travis, and maybe we'll talk about what happened in Lake Travis later in the show, but I was hanging out with a bunch of Orioles fans. They're very chesty. Oh. Very chesty.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Well, the Orioles are coming up this weekend.
I mean, they're also a wild card team.
But they're, like, way, way ahead of where the Astros can conceivably be, true, wild card-wise. Like, they might get 100 wins this year as a wild card team.
Yeah. They're 42-22. They're 2.5 games back of the division now, because since Aaron Judge got kicked out of his first game ever, he's hit, like, 18 home runs.
Yep.
He's on a heater right now.
Yeah, the Yankees have some bats.
I could see why the Orioles fans are a little chesty right now. Even though, you know, it's like, why don't you... They've been irrelevant for how long? Ever?
I don't know. I mean, the Astros...
Since Ripken retired?
I'm not dumping on anybody with the way the Astros are playing this year. You're right. It has been a while, but they got new ownership. I mean, they should feel chesty right now.
It's true.
We can't be chesty anymore. It's ridiculous.
We can be chesty about the Texans.
That is true. Coming up next. Okay. This guy's not going to be on the Houston Texans this season. But something happened over the last couple of days while Joe was gone that should have you feeling good about his departure. We'll talk about that next. Golan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You know, myself, Mapes, Brian, we were discussing our next trip to Le Bourget, Lake Charles. We were a little worried that, you know, that UFC 303 might be in question. They canceled the press conference. But all of a sudden, the UFC dropped a trailer this weekend for Chandler versus Conor McGregor. And you know what? We're feeling good. We're going to be at Le Bourget coming up for UFC 303 on the 29th of this month. We're excited to go check out the sports book, to be there for a big UFC fight. We'll be on the patio. They'll have the big screen out there, hoping still crawfish season a little bit, feeling good, getting some crawfish, or watching some fights and betting on games. Le Bourget Lake Charles is a fun place to go. 19 betting kiosks, great casino there as well, plenty of good restaurants there. Food's great inside the sports book as well. When you leave Texas and want to bet on your Texas teams, Le Bourget is absolutely the best place to do it. And before you go, make sure you download the Penn Play app, and you can win up to $2,000 in Penn Play cash. Hey, make a weekend of it. Come to Le Bourget June 29th. We'll be there. You should be too.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Paul Gallant, Joe George. Joe George back. So on Thursday, Houston Texans beat reporter for ESPN, DJ Bien-Aimé, stopped by to talk about the goings-on at Texans minicamp. And there's been a promising development both at OTAs and minicamp, Joe, that has to do with a Houston Texans rookie. Kamari Lassiter, per DJ Bien-Aimé, is putting pretty significant distance between himself and all competitors when it comes to the position. Cornerback number two, here is DJ expanding on that.
If you start in a 400-meter race, he started at the 200 mark, and he only has 200 meters to go, and the rest of the guys are starting at the 400-meter mark.
Wow.
Now, if he gets caught, then he gets caught. But he's run with the ones the majority of the time. Minicamp has just been exclusively him.
Wow.
We haven't seen him take that many reps in the nickel.
We've seen a couple of video highlights, at least, of Lassiter and Stephon Diggs and others. So what about him is standing out? Is it his ability to break on the ball, his speed?
He puts himself in good position, and he's able to, like, break on the ball. He's able to transition into his breaks, out of his breaks pretty smoothly. Obviously, his speed isn't, like, blazing, but he's not what the 4.6 says at the 40 time.
So, Joe, you hear that. Are you buying into the idea of a second-round cornerback that a lot of people, at least after the draft, looked at because of his lack of speed, because of his size as a nickel corner? When you hear that this guy's working with the first-team unit, are you saying to yourself, oh, okay? Or are you thinking to yourself, let's see this in training camp in the preseason before we put too much stock into it?
At this point, I have no reason to doubt what the Texans, what their process is in terms of evaluating young talent. Nick Caceres done a great job. So it surprises me because everything, like you said, everything we read was he was too slow. He's a nickel corner. It was a reach for a draft pick. The Texans should have been more aggressive to take one of the two corners that went, what, Kool-Aid and Cooper went right before you took Lassiter in the draft. That they should have been more aggressive to get one of those guys. But seeing what everyone's talking about now and the way that the team is describing him, it just kind of makes me feel like he's going to win this job pretty quickly. Now, I don't think it's the hardest job to win. So it doesn't mean I have high expectations for Kamari Lassiter this year. Jeff Okuda and CJ Henderson are both guys that have been cut by multiple teams or traded away. Yeah, they were first-round picks, but they haven't panned out in the NFL. If you were to tell me that there's a Lassiter is going to be your starting cornerback week one and be pretty good, or one of those guys, I would bet my money on Lassiter for sure, because those guys have already failed. Like no offense to them, but they're one cut away from probably being in the XFL.
And not a good sign when you hear from DJ there using a track analogy that, I mean, he's already halfway to the finish, Lassiter, where Jeff Okuda, and CJ Henderson, the two guys who are former top 10 picks that you brought in, are not there. Not a good sign for them. You would think that the guys that have been in the NFL for a little bit of time would have a easier time picking things up. And while they might have athleticism in spades, mm-hmm. I mean, if they are already being looked at as afterthoughts to Lassiter, then that might be more about them than Lassiter. Whatever the case, great to hear that Lassiter's in that spot.
Absolutely.
I was pretty skeptical of the idea of him potentially being a starting number two corner. Lots of very, very, very sunshine and rainbow Texans fans online who are saying, yeah, he's going to step in right away. Well, you have nothing to base that off of until now. Now you actually do. I hope it continues.
Because you see the college stuff, like when you look at he only like the amount of touchdowns was less than like three he allowed this year. I mean, his PFF grades at Georgia were elite. Everything, his statistics in college, everything told you that he was a very, very good corner. We know it's a big jump. The quality of quarterback play is obviously a big part of that. There's so much talent on the Georgia defense that sometimes these guys have great stats and it doesn't mean as much. But when the college stats and then the mini camp and training camp or OTA reports start coming in and they start to match up between what you read and what people are seeing with their eyes, it just gives you okay, maybe the 40 time was wrong. Like there are guys who don't run great 40s, but they're great football players. The 40, that's why it's not the end-all, be-all.
40's dumb.
Yeah, it's one of the dumbest things. But for a cornerback of, like, the one position you're going to put more stock in, you would say corner. But this is a very, very good thing if he can win the job right away, because at least he's better than those other two guys. There's probably no reinforcements coming. This is it.
And interesting that you say probably no reinforcements coming. Steven Nelson, who was the Houston Texans number two cornerback last season, announced his retirement. He told this to KPRC, quote, "Retirement, after thinking it over and having some talks with my family, I think it's time for me to take a step back and spend more time with my family. We're expecting a newborn this coming month, and I wanted to devote all of my time and energy to that and various business ventures off the field.
His podcast.
I'm extremely proud of what I was able to do in the game of football." I do find it interesting that there was not a lot of interest in Steven Nelson, just given he had a pick six in the playoffs. He, at the very least, maybe isn't the best number two corner, but he's a guy who makes plays at that position. I felt like he was, at the very least, reliable. Not the best, again, I'm saying that, but
yeah.
The fact that he went from being the Texans' number two corner to not really seeming to have much of a market this offseason and now announcing his retirement. Maybe he did not want to play anymore, but honestly, I would just base it off of the conversations
that he had online.
Yeah, the, like
Milk Dud Man calling D'Amico Ryan's out, or last year with Nick Caserio. I'm assuming that he thought he should be more highly paid than he is. And maybe this is a guy that the Texans have in their back pocket. Say there's some injuries, like, I don't know, Derek Stingley injury happens. Maybe they can give him a phone call. But I was surprised to see him retire. I feel like he's still got some stuff left in the tank. And this must be about a lack of interest in him across the league. But I feel like there should be some.
Yeah, it's because even getting to Houston, like there wasn't like a big, you know, interest. There was a lot of criticism of Nick Caserio and the Texans for even, you know, giving him the deal that they did. And last year when they re-upped it to give him more guaranteed money, he had to just, I guess, go into free agency and just be disappointed with every offer he got. And like, maybe he had like a dollar figure in mind of like, I'll keep playing football. I'll step away from my family and not focus on these other business ventures if I make X amount of money. And maybe the league was just telling him, hey, man, you're a vet minimum guy. And that's not good enough for him. Is the Milk Dud Man thing weirder now that he's retired? Or does it make more sense?
Yes. It was completely unnecessary.
Like, yeah.
Oh, you're not doing enough for the community. How do you know that? Maybe he doesn't publicize it. I don't think D'Amico Ryans lives on Instagram.
I mean, if I'm another team, I wouldn't want Steven Nelson anyways.
Why not?
Because of the Caserio stuff.
Nah, I wouldn't care about
that. He's a vet minimum guy. Like, I don't want a single headache for a guy that I'm paying minimal money.
If it's literally just bitching and moaning or talking bleep on social media, I don't care about that. That I mean, this is not, as you wrote in the show rundown, this isn't Xavier Howard. What the hell?
What a weird dude. Really, all we have to say about that.
I mean, for those who don't know, Xavier Howard, who a lot of people wanted the Houston Texans to go after, former Dolphins cornerback who made a ton of money there, who I always thought was going to be too expensive because of the contract that he made before. Apparently, he sent pictures of basically, let's just say, provocative pictures that a significant other had sent him, and he sent those pictures to that significant other's child.
Weird thing.
Very bizarre. Very, very bizarre. I don't know why, but that guy clearly no longer an option for the Houston Texans, who do not like to bring in problem childs, if you will.
Yeah, well, this is like a real problem child, too. I mean, he's like, these are pretty serious charges he's going to be facing.
He's a dumbass, Xavier Howard, for this. And I mean, again, like, you take a look at sort of Xavier Howard over the last couple of years, and I could totally understand why he is still a free agent.
Yeah.
Know? Ever since he got paid, he really hasn't been the same player. There's been some injuries, but, I mean, he just hasn't been the same guy.
He's pretty much begging to be a Houston Texan this entire offseason.
He definitely was, yeah. He was,
he was telling everyone he could that he wanted to come be a Houston Texan, and they showed zero interest.
Correct. He has a Houston Texans tattoo.
You know that? I forgot about that.
Do you think the Texans are like, hey, can you cover that up, please?
Maybe that's why they got a new logo.
We don't want to be, yeah, we don't want to be attached to this.
For the most part, the logo's still the same, though.
Yeah, that's true. The logo is
just have the alternate, like, H-Town blue outlined logo.
Yeah.
Which is the most the Titans, I think, would allow them to do.
Yeah.
Does he have so he doesn't have the old English H.
No, he's not.
He has the Toro. Okay.
Unless he was at the Texans party when they were giving out free tattoos to people who wanted him for some reason.
We would have found out if he did that.
Yeah. So he's not coming. Steven Nelson's not coming. I do agree with what you said, though, about having him in the back pocket, though. That if
he's a phone call away, I don't think the bridge is burned. I don't think it's burnt over that. I don't think that anything Steven Nelson did should prevent the Texans from making a phone call.
He called Caserio clown freak and got signed like
exactly
2 weeks later.
So calling D'Amico the Milk Dud Man, I mean, I'm sure that Steven Nelson and D'Amico have had some sort of interaction in the past where Nelson felt comfortable doing that.
I guess. You must really like your coach to feel comfortable calling him out.
But this isn't like college sports, though, where if you go after the coach in a playful or you know, antagonistic way, this isn't one of those things where you're just going to be out for good, you know?
That's true.
There's a part of me that feels like this is just part of who Steven Nelson is, and perhaps it was more he thought it was more playful than it actually was, but the context or the tone gets lost because it's online.
Yeah.
On an Instagram story.
And I don't think that's the reason why he's not a Texan, to what Sean said. He did this last year with Caserio.
Yeah.
Reworked his contract.
But I am surprised he retired.
Said that at the end of May. Like, if he was going to be a Texan, he would have already been signed before the end of May, the start of June.
Sean Mapes behind the glass. Joe George. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next, the Boston Celtics have a 2-0 series lead in the NBA Finals. And I think what we saw last night in particular, the Rockets should have taken notice. I'll explain why next. Stick around.
Brought broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Boston Celtics have a 2-0 series lead in the NBA Finals after taking down Dallas last night. Pretty convincing win at the end, but there were moments in this game where it looked like Dallas had a chance.
This thing is over.
You think it's over?
Boston had everything that could have gone wrong. Basically, you're wrong. They couldn't shoot. Jason Tatum was pretty bad. And yeah, Dallas had a shot at it at one point. But to lose last night's game, or to lose that game, I'm not quite sure they win. Dallas wins more than one game this series.
105-98, the final score. To what you said about Jason Tatum, yeah, he was 6-22 in the game. The problem for Dallas is that Kyrie Irving, I thought, really struggled in this one. Not ideal. Right after you pointed the finger at Boston fans saying that they weren't loud enough, especially considering supposedly he has been getting into a back and forth with somebody seated in the sixth row for the first couple of games. Lots of ugly turnovers in that one. Luka can't do it all. Luka was fantastic in this one, especially early. And with the way he started that game, I thought for sure that there was a chance that the Mavericks would win. But Drew Holiday, who the Celtics got in a trade this offseason, scored 26 points. And on top of that, Kristaps Porzingis, once again off the bench, was fantastic. So how does this relate to the Houston Rockets? How do we localize this? What I look at is I think that the Houston Rockets need to focus on getting depth. And I get that you can look for the best possible player, one of those top three capable players at some point in their careers, and hopefully you get a guy like that in the draft, and maybe Jalen Green develops into that, and maybe Jabari Smith Jr. develops into that. But I think what Brad Stevens did as the general manager of the Celtics this offseason was just really so impressive. They got Drew Holiday after, for whatever reason, the Bucks said, no, we're going to make Damian Lillard a part of our team. And he was so good yesterday. They got Kristaps Porzingis. Building to get more and more depth is, I think, the key to this Rockets team eventually being an actual playoff player. And I think that, once again, you take a look at last night's game, you see this, the depth that Boston has. A team that has not done that big-time trade for that big-time star. If I'm the Rockets, I am trying to follow that model. You can find those pieces at the very end, those finishing touches like a Drew Holiday, like a Kristaps Porzingis. And if you're Rafael Stone, I think you look at this series and you say to yourself, I am sticking with the number three overall pick. I am not moving it away.
Yeah, it's about finding the right player, not the best player. Like, that's what Milwaukee tried to do. They tried to say, hey, we're going to go get Dame Lillard. We're going to put him here, and we're going to try to win a championship with Dame and Giannis. They had to fire their coach like a quarter of the way into the season. Drew Holiday comes in, and now he looks like he's the difference maker for the Boston Celtics, why they're going to win a championship this year. Like, as flawed as they can be, like, Drew Holiday is the perfect player for what they need. They developed their young core with Tatum and Brown and guys like Marcus Smart in the past, and then they moved on from the right players. Like, Brad Stevens has done a masterclass of moving on from guys when they need to and then making the right decisions. Like, even what they've achieved, like just the coaching perspective of what they've gone through. Brad was one of the best coaches in the NBA, best young coaches in the league. When he realized his message wasn't getting through anymore, he stepped aside. They get Udoka. Udoka goes on this massive run. They're forced to fire him. And then now they're going to bring in Joe Mazzulla, and he's going to be the one that wins the championship for them, not Udoka or Stevens. Like they've just found a way to, whether it's their own adversity that was thrust upon them with the Udoka situation, they have just adapted in every single way possible. It's super, super impressive.
They have diamond hands. I think, you know, they could have fired Mazzulla after last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. A lot of people were calling for it. I felt it was the fault of the players in that series, why things fell apart. But with Udoka for the Rockets, I mean, you got a really good coach.
Mm-hmm.
We all feel very good about that. And I just think that they have to be patient and stay the course, because, you know, the biggest difference I think that you see last night between Boston and Dallas is that Boston is just deeper. And I think we knew this going into the series. Obviously, Luka and Kyrie, that 1-2 combination, when they're on their A game, I think you have to take it over Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown. No matter how much I like those two.
Because
Tatum has these moments in the finals where you're just like, what the hell's going on? Brown is someone that you rely on, even though you know that Tatum is probably physically more talented. But when you have all these other guys around him, it makes it a whole lot easier. And, you know, it goes counter to the approach that Daryl Morey had. When Daryl Morey was building up this Rockets team, depth was really not at the forefront. It was about, hey, can I get the best possible stars? And, I mean, look, to his credit, they actually challenged the Golden State Warriors specifically the most in the 2018 Western Conference Finals, where they had the 3-2 series lead.
Mm-hmm.
But depth, chemistry, teamwork, patience, this is stuff that the Rockets, I think, should be thinking about. And I'm hoping that Tillman Fertitta is not going to get impatient seeing this and wanting to jump the line and take the shortcut, because everyone wants to take the shortcut in life. But I think they should be looking at this and thinking to themselves, Boston was so damn patient with what they did. How do we do something similar to what they did?
So my only pushback is that they look patient. I think they look more patient now, but think back to 2017 with Kyrie. They traded a Brooklyn Nets first-round pick. They ended up being Colin Sexton. And a bunch of, you know, nobodies. Isaiah Thomas was technically part of that deal, but he got hurt. But Jay Crowder is in that deal. They have the first one from Brooklyn. They send it to Cleveland to acquire Kyrie Irving. But what I give Boston credit for, again, is that when things aren't working, they found a way to get out of the Kyrie Irving business. So I think to what you're saying is, like they can trade for a player like the Celtics tried to do with Kyrie, but there has to be within reason of what you're giving up. And that is why I'm open to the idea of moving the pick. But that pick probably isn't worth moving for Donovan Mitchell. Like, Kyrie Irving was one of the best young players still in the NBA when they made that trade in 2017 for him. And it didn't work out in the long run. And they moved on, and they're going to win the championship now against him. But you have to be able to adapt. And you have to make the right moves. And I'm fine if they move the pick this year, but you have to make it for the right player.
Only for Mitchell. Really, for me, that's how I feel about it.
And not Mikal Bridges.
No, not Mikal Bridges.
Hard pass.
I could see doing, because part of what's made the Celtics good is the fact that they've not only built up this depth, but this offseason they improved on their depth. They went out and they're like, you know, Marcus Smart, not really cutting it for us. Let's go out and turn basically Marcus Smart and Robert Williams into Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday. It's basically what they did.
Clear upgrade, because Smart, yeah, Getting up there in age, not maybe the same guy he used to be, and Robert Williams never could be there, where with Kristaps, okay, he's finally out there, and with Drew Holiday, it might be the most reliable player not named Jaylen Brown on the court for Boston.
So what you have to look at is, is there a way that they can use the number three pick to upgrade a position like that, like the Celtics did, where I'm not saying package, you know, Jalen Green, Tari Eason, and the third pick to go get someone. I'm saying if you could do a third, you know, the number three pick and Dylan Brooks and Jock Landale and Jayshon Tate for whoever your Drew Holiday is or whoever your Kristaps is, you can do that, where it's more of a move that ultimately it's going to, this is what the Sucks says, ultimately it's going to come down to Tatum and Brown, these guys being good enough to get us to the championship, to the finals, where it looks like they're going to win. Tatum's kind of been good enough. He's been shooting a little too much, but he's been good enough in the rebounding and the assists to get him there. So, you know, if there's another one, if there's another side lesson, it's also maybe a little patience. Maybe these guys are, what, now 26, 27? Now, and we're already being like, guys, if this Rockets team doesn't do it with 22-year-old Afrin Şengün and 22-year-old Jalen Green, what? Then what? It's like, well, let's have a little bit more patience here. Now, the patience for the Celtics was that they're losing in the Eastern Conference Finals every year, not going 41-41. So it's a little bit easier to be patient, but I think that's another lesson, is the patience.
We do have some breaking news in the NBA, by the way, guys.
Yes. Should we stop talking about the Celtics to talk about this?
Well, we aren't ESPN the mothership. We are ESPN Houston. This should surprise no one. Dan Hurley, head coach of the UConn Huskies, two-time defending national champions, turned down a 6-year, $70 million offer from the Los Angeles Lakers. If you listened to me last week, I told you, the Lakers putting this out there, is it about actually having a chance at landing Dan Hurley, Or is it about the Lakers trying to make this time of year about themselves, a season where they didn't actually make the playoffs? It is 100% the latter. That is not a good job. Everyone thinks it is. Nope, you got to work with LeBron James. And LeBron James is not going to let you do what you want to do, especially if you're Dan Hurley. The Lakers, to me, are a bit of a clown car, have been. I know that they won the title in 2020, but this is an organization that is not, I think, as shiny as it used to be. And it is 100% a case of, well, no one's paying attention to us, that they put this out there. Go get your shine box, you loser organization. Okay, I can't say that. That's for Joe, right?
It's funny, Joe Pompiliano, who covers sports, like the NBA a lot, he just put this tweet out. He goes, it's almost like Dan Hurley leaked all of this through a trusted media source. And then apparently Woj.
He does know Woj.
Wrote a book about it, Dan Hurley's dad. To secure himself an even bigger contract at UConn, Woj gets the big scoop, and the Lakers get to say we tried. Win, win, win.
And they still get J.J. Redick.
It's not a win for the Lakers. The Lakers look like losers here.
They do look like
losers. They're like complete losers.
Yeah, like you see the Part of My Take interview from like last year when Hurley's talking to them. He's like, yeah, I'm going to coach in the NBA. Like that's my goal. You have the Lakers job sitting in front of you. It shows to what you're saying. The Lakers are not as relevant as they like to pretend they are anymore.
I hate that they had to be like, yeah, well, Dan Hurley's into us. No.
Good luck.
He's Joe George. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, guys. So, it wasn't a very fun series for the Houston Astros with the way that it ended. They did win 2 out of 3. The real big question, what should the Astros do about Ryan Presley? And could this former enemy of the Houston Astros be a part of them in the near future? First, let me tell you about my friends at the Highway Cantina, where you can get a 975 tall Texan margarita. I watched game one of the finals there. Very fun place to watch a game. Watched it with my buddy. Thank God my buddy was there, because your boy may or may not have driven into a ditch while trying to parallel park by the Highway Cantina. No matter. Guess what happened? Still went inside. Still had my margarita. Had some tacos as well. The chips, the salsa verde, the salsa roja. It's such an awesome place to swing by the Highway Cantina. Whether you're going there before or after a baseball game, it's on St. Emmanuel. It's right by the stadium. It's right by the basketball arena. It's right by the soccer stadium. But maybe you work downtown. You're looking for a place to go for happy hour, to impress the boss, or to go on a date. The Highway Cantina is going to check all the boxes that you are looking for when it comes to Tex-Mex. It's fantastic. Great food. Options that you wouldn't think of. Incredible chefs behind the scenes. It's the Highway Cantina in downtown Houston. Tell them Paul Gallant sent you by.
ESPN 97.5.